I'm Phil Robinson, I'm the director.
And I'm John and Lee, the director of photography.
This is our fourth movie together. And counting.
That's right.
Yeah. We started with a very cool shot. We were inside a hangar in the old George Air Force Base in Victorville, California. And we found, when we scouted the hangar, there was this long tube at the rear of it. It was an exhaust tube for...
It was an air tunnel, a wind tunnel for testing wings. Okay.
And we realized if we started tracking with the bomb in the tunnel, we could actually have the tunnel open up and reveal the inside of the hangar full of missiles, and then open up the hangar doors to reveal the Israeli air base. It was sort of a way of saying, this is the nuclear weapon is emerging into the world, which sets off all this whole chain of events.
And I think we've talked about it in the past on other films, but it's always nice to start a film with an image that you don't recognize, mm-hmm. so that the audience gets thrown a little bit, and then you have to, as they grasp that image, then they're kind of in your hands a little bit.
Right. A tricky piece of camera operating, because the camera dolly is attached to the bomb at the beginning of the shot, and at a certain point detaches from it. And Larry Carman, who was our operator, had to spend days trying to figure out how to work out all the mechanics of that.
And it's the degree of difficulty is raised by the fact that we shot at magic hour, which is a misnomer since it's not really an hour. It's about a magic 10 minutes, and there's very little time to get that shot. You can't do too many takes or something like that.
Yeah. This shot, we actually set it up one day, and just before the plane took off, the tower said, you can't be that close to the plane, so we actually left Larry behind, and the following day we went out to the desert, and he got this shot. The bomb underneath the plane is CG. The FAA would not let us fly this plane with that prop bomb slung underneath, so all of these shots of the plane have a CG bomb underneath it. And a few days later, we were out in Death Valley with our plywood SAM site. And this, I recall, was on stage in Montreal.
Yeah, back on stage in Montreal, kind of towards the end of things.
Yeah. We had a very good aerial unit, Craig Hoskins, who's one of the best there is, and he shot the plates that you see outside the cockpit here, in addition to shooting all the shots of the plane. And the day that we shot the pilot in this cockpit, we were supposed to have a green screen. It didn't show up, so we had to shoot it against black, which made the visual effects job much harder. So all these reflections on the windows were painstakingly done.
And that cockpit is tiny. I mean, we just used a little section of a plane. Wasn't much room to maneuver in there.
What was the lens we used on this very wide-angle lens at the beginning of the desert? What was that? Do you recall?
A 20, which in anamorphic is much wider than it sounds. Yeah. A 20 in regular 35 is just a wide lens, but in anamorphic it's super wide.
I loved suggesting this was an otherworldly location.
There's actually, at the time, there was only one of these lenses, and they've since made another one at Panavision. Now there's two of them.
This was out in the California desert in June. The temperatures reached over 125, as I recall, almost 130.
Yeah, I remember one day when we had three cameras and only one of them worked by the end of the day because bits of the other two had actually melted in the heat.
It's kind of an extraordinary moment, as I recall, when the camera operator turned and said, the assistant operator turned and said, the camera has melted. We all thought, we don't have a chance.
Get some straws.
And then we did some motion control, some time lapse here to have that last piece of the bomb disappear under the sand, just to show the idea that no one's ever going to find this, that the Israelis can't search for this because it's over the border in Syria, and the Syrians don't know there was an A-bomb, so this thing is just under the sands and will stay there until someone accidentally finds it. And we used satellite photos all through the movie instead of establishing shots, which I thought was a really much more interesting than the typical establishing shots of a building or a city. And also, thematically, it suggests a world in which things are surveilled.
And one of the low moments for any cameraman reading a script is when he gets to the part that says establishing shot, because they're always just, you know, yeah. It's like an anesthetic. Right. Just puts you right out.
Now, we got to shoot in the actual facility in Canada where the Canadian government would have gone underground in case of a nuclear attack. They call it the Diefenbunker. We love that tunnel. We love these vault doors they go through. And we particularly love these two parallel hallways, one of which sloped up and one of which sloped down.
And it was a real struggle, I remember, to get to shoot there because we had to make a long move to Ottawa just for that scene. And in the end, it was the tunnel that kept us going because it was such a good-looking tunnel.
And then we used handheld in this shot because this is when we cut to work on stage, and we wanted to make sure it didn't feel like we'd gone to an artificial environment, but that still had a little reality to it.
Who the hell is the bulletproof called?
Yeah, so we wanted to use nukes in Chechnya.
And in this scene, we really start to do something that we did all throughout the movie, and it's something I call lots of foreground. We tried whenever possible to always have a lot of things happening in the foreground of every shot. And I think it helps establish a certain kind of realistic point of view. You feel that you're in the room, but you don't have a front row seat.
Sure, it'll take about a minute. Yeah, I think also shooting it handheld gives it a little more tension than it might have had otherwise. You know, this scene, as with a lot of them, has a lot of talking heads in it. And just putting the camera on the shoulder and taking it off a dolly gives it a little more interest.
Yeah. Under the two-man rule, the order must be confirmed by someone on the approved list.
Gene Revelle, National Security Advisor, second from the top.
Is it black tie?
Okay, I'm on my way. Can we, finish this up.
I blew something here. I wished I'd had this line without a pause in the middle. I wished I'd told Jamie not to pause, because I think you lose the steam of a joke when you kind of stretch it out. The audience gets a little bit ahead of you, and it loses a little bit of its snap. Now, this on the way to Ottawa to shoot that, we shot this. We wanted to show that the underground facility is buried inside a mountain. And we couldn't find a mountain, a stone mountain, to put it in, but we did find a tunnel that was built under a railroad overpass. And we picked this so that when we cut to the wide shot, we left a lot of headroom. And I think it's the next shot after this, the CGI people actually created a mountain above what was in fact just a hill with a railroad track going over it. This is the shot here, that all that stuff above their heads is CG.
Chechnya, his liver, what's left of it. How is he, by the way?
Well, he scheduled a press conference for this afternoon, so at least we know he can sit up.
Why not negotiate?
The interview is over.
Chechnya just received.
Chechnya is part of us.
Которые желают раскола.
It is only criminals and their friends in the West wish it to be separate.
But, Mr. President, if you would kindly come back.
Now, this sequence, we filmed the interview with President Zorkin and edited the interview so that it would play back on the monitors in this room. But then every time we did a piece of coverage with one of these actors in the room, we had to have that actor saying his lines at the right moment in the playback of the tape. And this is an actress named Lee Garlington, who has been in all four movies we've done together, and the little in-joke in the scene is that they refer all through the scene to Elena Rishkov being in the background. And Elena Rishkov was the name of the character that Lee played in Sneakers.
Elena Rishkov. No, that is not Chelinsky. This is busted. It's Chelinsky.
No, you're thinking Trubisky.
No, I'm not.
And I ain't Trubisky either.
I know. It's Chelinsky.
No, it's not. Believe, trust me.
Look, he is standing next to Elena Rishkov.
This was a cool set. We had visited the Russia desk at the CIA and patterned this set very closely after. In fact, a lot of the set dressing in the set came from the CIA. They let us have a lot of unclassified stuff to strew around. But I remember when we scouted it, we were all struck by how it looked like sort of a college Russian studies department.
Yeah, the real place is actually very corporate, you know.
And they spend their time watching Russian TV and surfing the web.
Chechnya, asking the West for protection. She's like a beautiful
escaping the clutches of a literal spare.
Now, we wanted to establish Dressler as a man of some mystery, and we wanted to not really give away who he was or who these folks were. And we found this very unusual room at McGill University, as I recall. Is that right?
Yep.
And the original plan for the scene was the audience would not know who he was. And the studio felt very strongly they wanted the audience to know he's the villain. And they wanted him, I don't know, goose-stepping or something. And the compromise we came up with was we'll show a close shot of the inside of his watch, like he's wearing his father's old watch from the Nazi era, and on the inside of the watch there's a very faint rubbed down over time swastika. If I had it to do again, I would try to come up with a different way to do this. I loved the idea originally of not saying he's a Nazi. I'd rather just show these guys, these shadowy figures in the background, have some creepy music and make the audience realize there's something untoward here, but we don't quite know what it is yet. But we lost that argument. And I think this was the day the camera melted.
Yeah.
We had constructed a village complete with a satellite dish in the background there that some people thought was a basketball hoop, but it wasn't.
One of our big weapons here in the desert was the technocrane because it allowed us to move the camera around without moving the chassis around. And that terrain, it's pretty challenging to have to move things.
And the technocrane is just a long telescoping
arm. Crane, and then the camera's out at the end of that, so you can park the chassis in one place and make moves and reach out with the camera without moving the chassis.
I recall this as being a very pleasant scene to shoot because, one, it was at night, so it actually cooled down to about 80. And the other is this was the last thing we shot in the desert. When we finished shooting the scene, we all got into vans, drove to Las Vegas, got on a plane, and came home.
Yeah. Well, always, when I see this scene, what I really see is my suitcase in a van. I get a little thrill.
It was the end of a very long shoot. It's always been one of my favorite moments, is this bomb dropping.
Это невыносимо. Бесконечные вопросы насчет моего здоровья.
Да, господин президент.
Обязательно надо говорить. Он крепкий.
Another one of my favorite moments here is Zorkin's heart attack. We had a much longer sequence cut originally. We shot more material of this. And in the act of cutting it, we realized the funniest thing is just let him say the line and just collapse. We had a stunt double take that fall. And here we are on day two of the shoot, which is about a month before you would normally schedule a love scene. And I think we spent the whole day on this scene.
Yeah, at least, right?
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Now, this was inside an apartment. And really, we were just sort of going for that early morning feel. So that's real light coming through the windows, but that light was coming through that window all day long.
It's actually you.
The close-up of the feet came because during the wide shot, I noticed that their feet were sort of entwined at the bottom of the bed, and I looked over at you, and just as I started to say it, you said it too. You said, "We got to get a shot of the feet."
I like that shot.
Yeah.
There's also, I have to say it, is when Ben showed his true colors on this movie. I thought a lot of actors in this situation are tense and anxious and not comfortable doing these scenes, especially early on in the schedule, and he was
a good support.
Yeah, helpful and friendly and right from the get-go.
As he was through the whole movie.
Yeah.
I don't ever recall him saying no.
And I think, I don't remember who said it, but there's something good, I think, about having material like this early on in the shoot, because when the studio sees this footage, they get kind of a good feeling about the direction the movie's going in. It looks sort of warm and fuzzy and romantic and good-looking actors, and it's a little easier for them to get behind that than some of the sort of more industrial stuff.
Bridget told me that at the end of this day of shooting, that Ben said to her, you know, that was really sexy. And she said, duh.
Forget it.
Oh, wait, it'll stop.
I don't know what this is.
Just go about your business.
Timing sucks.
Do what you have to do. I totally understand.
Yes, this is Dr. Muller. No. Muller, you paged me? Oh.
Hello? Yes, this is Jack Ryan. Jesus. Okay, I'll be there in half an hour. I gotta go. I have an emergency at work. I have to run. I'm sorry. Kathy, yeah. How about dinner tonight?
Yeah.
How about tomorrow night?
Jack, I said yes to tonight.
I know.
What kind of emergency does a historian have?
He died at 0420 Zulu. 8.5 hours later, they swore in a new president. Now everybody wants to know who this new guy is.
Who is he?
Alexander Nimrod.
You're kidding me. I wrote a paper about him a year ago.
Well, there was a section of the real CIA that we scouted that had this sort of, it looks like acoustical tile, but it's really to keep microwaves out. So that when you go into a certain section of that building, or actually it's into this second building, the whole building is secure from emanations coming out.
Yes, sir.
When we were editing this scene, Neil Travis, the editor, said to me, the moment when Morgan looks at him and comments on the clothes, and Jack kind of stammers his reply, he says, that's the moment I realized I was going to really love this movie. He said, you don't see that kind of a relationship in this kind of a movie often. And I remember the day that he came to Daly's and he was just all smiles. He said, I cut the scene this morning, so I'm going to love this film. And this was another one of those sets that was patterned very closely on the real thing, the operations center at Langley. I remember being struck by how every desk had a little sign over it describing the function of that desk, or whether it was, you know, Latin America or NSA liaison or whatever.
United Arab Emirates or something. It looked like a financial center of trading or something.
Mm-hmm. I was never really happy with this location. It's the closest we could find in Montreal to a Senate corridor, and it just didn't work, for me anyway. But what's cool about this location is we could not find a Senate hearing room anywhere in Canada that looked like a U.S. Senate hearing room. And so we went for something sort of high-tech, and which is called a Secure Compartmentalized Information Facility, which is basically a room within a room. So we had this very expensive glass surrounding the room, only one wall of which was the glass that turns opaque, because I think we literally couldn't afford more than that.
I think that just that one wall was close to $30,000. It was very expensive. It had to be cut exactly to size.
Mm-hmm.
But it was great looking stuff.
Yeah. And it gave the whole set a lovely feel, that sense of you can see through to a wood, an old-fashioned wooden room, but inside you're in some high-tech facility. And there's a quality to the light. What did you do in here? There's something very special about this.
It's all lit by fluorescence, most of which are cool whites, so they're kind of on the green side, except for the people's faces, which I used white light for. So the whole room is quite cold, but the people look normal. Except like in this shot, that guy way in the back, he's in a cool white, whereas the person speaking is in a white light.
And this was a full day of shooting, as I recall. We shot a lot of coverage and just kept moving around and changing size because no character in the scene moves.
Right.
They're all stuck in their little chairs, so we moved around and kept changing shots to keep it visually interesting.
Yeah, it's a little bit like a courtroom in that sense, mm-hmm. except in this case, not even the attorney gets up. You know, it's just everybody's in one spot. But there's some great faces in this room, I think.
Yeah. And it was fun. Joseph Summers, who plays the senator, is a wonderful, wonderful actor. It was really fun to work with him.
I was
was out of line back there. I apologize. Senators don't like to be surprised. I was giving them a hint
now,
of what it is.
I know you loved this angle, and I got to tell you, this one just juts out. Every time I see it, I think, man, that's somebody trying to hide the fact they're not in Washington, which in fact is exactly what it was.
And that it was winter, not spring.
That's right.
Because in that shot, there are flower beds that are covered over with wooden boxes and dead leaves put on top of them.
Yeah. We did this long lens single shot first, and then we did a lot of coverage, steady cams walking alongside them. And I just found that, you know, I didn't need any cuts. It kind of plays great right from here. But every time we changed an angle, we had to move to a different part of the building because it was so hard finding anything that didn't look like Canada in the background.
If you were doing it again, would you not shoot the coverage?
Probably not.
Now,
out the window, you can see a little bit of Baltimore. That's from a green screen. Because we wanted to establish in this set that Baltimore is out there so that later on when the set gets trashed... We understand a little bit of the geography, but it's a very expensive piece of green screen, about like a second and a half.
Right.
We had to scan this entire shot digitally.
I think maybe more time was spent making that decision on whether to shoot the hospital as a practical effect or a visual effect than any other decision, single decision that I was involved in anyway.
I think that's right.
You know, we're right on the cusp of visual effects taking over most of special effects,
mm-hmm.
and that single, you know, decision was an example of where it's all headed, I think.
Right.
There was quite a lot of fighting there in 1973. They witnessed it.
For this tent, the art department flew a fellow in from Morocco with all of this material. Basically, the tent and all the dressings came from Morocco, and We had an Arabic language coach who came on the set, and he was very, when he walked in, he says, I feel like I've lived in this tent. He was very impressed with the reality of it.
I was less impressed with the reality of it because none of it came apart. I couldn't get any light through it. It was so densely woven, obviously to keep the sun out, but it also kept out all the light. I remember spending a lot of time on that shot with Colm.
The silhouette
with the lantern, yeah, because there's a guy behind him with a light, shining the light at him, and he had to do it just perfectly. And if he didn't hide himself behind Colm, then you could see my light.
Right.
I remember it was late one evening when we spent quite a bit of time doing that, but I'm glad you stuck with it. Yeah,
it was worth it. It was great. It
would have been easy to throw in the towel, but you stuck with it.
I was too weak to throw in the towel. And I must say I loved this set. This was Olson's apartment in Damascus, and I thought it had a lovely Middle Eastern feel, but it was clearly the place of a guy who has some money.
I just like associating the Antique Roadshow with the bad guy. That makes the smoking connection look insignificant as far as I'm concerned.
We had to build a rig to get this insert, as I recall. We had to actually move the monitor instead of the camera.
Right. Just to keep the screen in focus, you have to keep the camera still and right. Move the monitor by it.
We stole this shot from the webcam scene and just flipped it left to right so it wouldn't look like it was in the same scene, but I realized at some point I needed to show who was getting that piece of email. This cat was perfect. As a take after take, and I forget what the trainer did, but he got that cat to lick its paws every take.
Yeah, I think he put a little cat food or something on the paws.
Yeah.
Or something. And here, what looks like a tiny single woman apartment is actually a tiny single woman's apartment.
It's incredible what Hollywood can do.
The camera barely fit in this place.
Oh, it was unbelievable. Yeah, we were all backed up against the wall, as I recall.
Oh.
Jack.
You can't tell me where you're going.
Jack.
What was nice is that by shooting, and I think the reason we picked that location is by shooting from the bedroom, you could see the dining room table that she had lit it with candles and put out. She was going to have this nice dinner. And it tells a little bit of the story.
Now, this is a set that's actually totally built on the ground, and what makes it look like it's in motion is a slight rocking motion of the camera on something called a Dutch head, so that you can not only tilt it up and down, but change the horizon.
It's because of the START treaty. We get to inspect to make sure they're really decommissioning their nuclear arsenal. Hello?
I love Morgan's laugh in this scene.
Thanks. Thanks a lot.
Now we come to the second unit in Moscow, and they actually got to film inside the Kremlin grounds, which we're led to believe is the first time that they'd ever let a feature film crew inside the grounds. And the second unit shot a lot more of this than I thought we'd ever use, but in fact I'm glad we had it. It makes a nice little sequence of following the cars through. I just figured we'd get a shot of the Kremlin.
Right. No, that stuff looks great. I remember when we saw it in dailies, I just thought, wow, this is really good-looking stuff.
Yeah. And this was the lobby of a hotel in Montreal. Off this lobby, off this corridor, is the ballroom where we shot the White House Correspondents' Dinner. And we smoked up this corridor, didn't we?
Yeah, there's smoke in here. We put smoke in almost all the Russian locations in an effort to diffuse the light and make a distinction between it and the American side.
Dr. Ryan.
This is one of those scenes that's very deceiving. When you look at it on paper, you think, oh, it's a couple of pages of people talking. But there's so many people to cover that it winds up being an inordinate amount of coverage. And this was our only really, really horrible long day. This was a 17-hour day, as I recall.
Yeah, it actually is dark out during about half of the work we did in this scene. When you look out towards those doors, it's just blown out with lights.
I met my wife in my third year and have not looked at another woman since. I was referring to the first 2 years. Sir. Could Miss Daly Nalich examine police? I like you.
Another recurring motif that's in here is practical lights in the backgrounds. That whenever possible, you always tried to have the chandeliers or something, things that are lit.
Right.
So you're saying looking out those doors in the background now,
that's
artificial.
Dark. Yeah, that's dark out there, and that's my lights coming through it.
And you know, at one point, when we decided that it'd be cool to have this scene be about the president having his picture taken, because originally it was just they'd take him to his office, and he said, let's have him be doing something. And I kind of like the idea that he's a media-savvy, new generation leader. He's having his picture taken. But we thought it'd be cool if it's with some ancient camera. And they found us a photographer in Montreal, and he's actually the photographer in the scene. It's his camera, who had one of these old pieces of equipment. And this is our introduction to Grishkov, the great lurker. Michael Byrne is a wonderful actor, and one of the reasons we cast him is that he's got these very intense eyes. And it's very striking. For a guy who most of the movie is standing in the background watching other people, you wanted somebody whose look is compelling.
Well, he's actually the minister of upstaging, too, because he sort of drifts into the background. He gets behind one of the speaking parts whenever he can and kind of floats out of the background. He's really good at that.
And what you're suggesting is that afterward, they can all live together under the same roof. But what really happens is the betrayed husband buys a gun.
That went well.
Who's the guy with Nemirov?
Anatoly Grushkov.
Old KGB?
Been lurking around since Brezhnev. Plays all sides and nobody's had the guts to get rid of him.
Is that because he knows where all the bodies were buried?
Probably because he buried them himself.
Everybody that I know comments about this shot. They compliment us on this shot, and we didn't do it. The aerial unit did this.
Take the credit.
Yeah. It's on a. This was a frozen lake, as I recall, north of Montreal. And in the wintertime, it becomes a land bridge.
Right.
And this is on stage. It's just a car with frosted windows.
Car standing still.
So we had a nice, on the left, that nice reflection of the leaves going by, or the trees going by.
Yeah, although I remember the script supervisor saying to me, you know, on the frozen lake shot, there are no trees. And I said, I think it'll be okay.
And this is the water treatment plant. If you look in the background, there are these onion dome buildings that look very Russian. That's CGI. We shot this in the wintertime because that's when this was all snowed in. But Morgan wasn't with us until this day in April. And so we added all artificial snow out there. This was actually a nice spring day in Montreal.
I remember that we were looking for locations to shoot, if it was snowing, things we could go to in the event of snow, and that was one of them. And we actually caught that exterior
on a good
in
day.
The snow, yeah.
And the snow was falling that day,
right? Right.
We tried so hard to get in here.
And I think, remember how struck we were by this big, hollow room.
And the tile, I love the way this place looks because of the tile. It just seemed like just the right anachronism.
Mm-hmm. And that sort of wrought iron fencing along it did look like some ancient, not ancient, but some old Russian facility.
And it looked like maybe it had a former life even as something else. That...
This room, when I look at it now, I think we cluttered it up too much. Mm-hmm. The room when we scouted it was so striking because it was just this long symmetrical room with these very interesting windows. And it's a feature of the room that I think is a little bit hidden now with all of the set dressing and all of the things that we've been, the people we put in.
Okay. Sir? I'm sorry. Just one question.
But we loved this little glass booth that the art department built, and I remember that was way in the background. We just sort of moved it right into the middle of the room because it was so cool.
Yeah.
Doctors Milanov.
One of the reasons that I like those practicals in these Russian locations was that, you know, we talked about how in Russia it should look cold indoors as well as outdoors.
Right.
That they didn't have enough of anything, including heat.
Mm-hmm.
And it always makes the room look a little colder, I think, to put in some really warm highlight. You know, those little bits of orange from those practicals make the whole room look colder.
Because it highlights how blue
how
the rest
blue
of
everything
are.
Else yeah. is. Yeah.
Very impressive. Almost seemed to have
you were mixing daylight with.
It's mostly daylight, and then there's some fluorescence. But then those practicals are pure tungsten, although they don't actually light anything.
Mm-hmm. And it was a challenge shooting Haifa in Montreal, but I think by starting on this. Crate and making this move under Olsen and coming up to the ship, we sort of hid much of Montreal
and having
a nice
sunny maybe day. Our second sunny day of the entire picture.
That was key.
Okay. We touched down at Andrew at 21:30. Tell him to meet me there.
Sir, three missing scientists. Milanov's expertise is detonators. Spassky's expertise is the package, the nuclear core itself. And Orlov is a mathematician whose expertise is the geometry.
I remember when we first started talking about this set, this little executive jet set, everybody said, well, you know what, this plane is too small because Ben and Morgan are both, you know, 6'3", 6'4", and I said, perfect. And I love the fact they have to kind of hunch over a little bit, that they're too big for the plane.
Yeah, I like that too. It makes it a lot harder to light, but it's worth it because it makes them a little uncomfortable.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you know that.
Secure source inside the Kremlin.
So for this scene, we just popped one side wall out for the scene, right?
Right.
We're lighting and shooting from that.
Right, although the ceiling pieces didn't come out in sections, so the light that's on Morgan in that two shot with him and Ben, is that light is actually hidden behind Ben, which is a dangerous game to play because Ben decides to lean back, there's the light, but it's the last resort sometimes. You know, Ben is a remarkably easy person to light because he's so attractive that no matter where you put a light, he looks good.
Right.
You know, and Morgan, on the other hand, because he was wearing eyeglasses, it was almost impossible to get a light on him, and then his eyeglasses frequently dictated how he was lit.
Right. This shot, whenever I see the shot, I remember how we couldn't figure out, we didn't want to just cut to a shot of this plane already taxied to a stop. We were, in the script, it was going to taxi to a stop. We realized, well, that's 30 seconds of screen time. So we just thought, well, we'll just start on the back of this guy's head who's standing out in the rain with no umbrella, and then reveal the plane. And it turned out to be a very nice introduction of the character. You think, who is this guy getting wet? And man, did Liev get wet that night.
Yeah, and I never heard him complain either, for that matter. I mean, and it was cold.
It was his idea.
Yeah.
He suggested it, and we leapt on the idea, and I think he lived to regret it, because it was freezing that night.
I always feel badly in those situations when the actor's freezing and wet, and I'm walking around in full rain gear, like hand warmers, and then I get over it.
And I love this shot of Morgan walking away. This was just sort of a stolen shot. We saw it and decided to just keep rolling, I think.
You know, I always think of, there's a shot in Field of Dreams that reminds me of Burt Lancaster walking down the street with the umbrella. I always thought of that when we did that shot.
That's interesting. I hadn't thought of that. That's Mace Neufeld, our producer, on the left, in his traditional cameo role in these films. This was James Cromwell's first day on the movie. And I wanted to shoot the audience reactions first, because I wanted to get them fresh. They were, you know, local extras, and I wanted them laughing, really. So we set the camera up on the platform, and we just kept feeding jokes to Jamie. Some clean, some dirty, and he spent 2 hours just telling jokes to these people, many of whom didn't speak English, but they laughed right.
The young Marine officer in Vietnam, I did, on a handful of occasions, smoke marijuana. California, 54 approval.
An interesting thing about cutting this scene, when the beepers start to go off, in our first cut, we had a lot of shots of people responding to their beepers, and then we realized the more interesting thing was showing shots of people looking around who weren't getting beeped. That actually kind of told the story. Like this shot here, that told the story better than people picking phones, you know, cell phones up and holding them to their ears.
At approximately 0600 Moscow time, the Russians launched a massive artillery strike against Grozny, the capital of Chechnya. The shells contain an experimental chemical weapon.
In the White House Situation Room, this is another set that's based very, very closely on reality. We had scouted the sit room. And it is simply that. It's just a wood-paneled room with a nice conference table, a couple of phones behind the president's chair, but very un-cinematic in many ways. Not the room that you'd think of as the sort of the Dr. Strangelove war room. It's just a conference room.
It almost looked in the White House, I thought, like a home theater or something, you know, mm-hmm. that, with wood paneling and inset monitors and things.
Jamie Cromwell was coming down with the flu on this day, and it was just a struggle for him to sit up straight. He was so feeling terrible. And I figured, well, we'll have to loop the scene because his voice had that husky quality. And turns out it was a very nice quality. You really felt like a president who was feeling the pressure and was weary of what he was about to get into.
Did you ask him if he wanted to stop?
I did, and he kept saying, I'm okay. So we shot his angle first, and then let him go home and go to bed, and we shot everybody else without him.
What do you think?
Mr. President. You know, in the real sit room, it had lights over the table, didn't it?
Yeah, because I remember it had these funny microphones that were almost invisible that hung off this light fixture.
Right.
You know, I mean, one of the things I consider with scenes like this is how to make the lighting efficient for shooting, because I think it's such a drain on the actors and the director to do these long scenes where you have to get 20 people in the room and everybody does a lot of talking. And I remember we moved pretty quickly in here just because I think it can really hurt the scene to bog down with a lot of lighting.
Because you had built into the set the practical lights that were lighting the actors.
Right. Although it was, I remember we went to see it one weekend and it had been done wrong, and that we got to that awful moment where you say to somebody, well, it's done wrong, and they look at you hoping that you won't say do it over again. And that was a vain hope, because my next words out of my mouth were do it over again.
And so most of the light on these guys is from the fixture over the table.
Yeah, and that fixture is so, my fixture is so broad. I had lights above that fixture, and it's so broad that light actually gets into their eyes a little bit instead of just being total top light.
The other thing that's accurate about this set design is in the White House basement, when you leave the Situation Room, you go through this little narrow corridor and right into the White House mess. And they wouldn't let us take pictures in the mess, but we ate lunch in there when we were scouting, and as I recall, Janine Opelwall, our designer, was furiously sketching the room and taking notes so that she could, in fact, design something that looked quite like the real place.
Excuse me, sir. Would you mind turning that up just a
little bit? Finally. Every nation has a right.
The Russian translator on this set is Lorraine Newman from Saturday Night Live.
I love the raster lines in those video pieces. You know, people work really hard to eliminate those things and make a crisp image, but I really like that those video images have texture.
Right. Now, the background, outside that hall, there's a gold wall there as these fellows step in the elevator. And as they do their lines, the stage crew was moving that gold wall out of the way. That was on rollers, as I recall, and they revealed a wood-paneled wall that was behind it, so that when the elevator doors open, we actually feel that we've moved to a different floor. This is an old live television trick that we were not too proud to steal.
No, and it wasn't even a stage. It was some room in that water treatment plant, so that it was exceptionally noisy moving those walls. The poor actors are trying to have a muted conversation in the elevator. Well, these walls are moving, sounding like boxcars outside.
So in Dressler's office, we had snow falling out the window. The Dressler's desk was actually patterned on Hitler's desk. And it's a wonderful set, but I realize how hard it is to shoot in what is essentially a rectangle. That the architecture doesn't have angles to break things up.
And one of the things that was cool in this set was that it had very, very high ceilings, but in anamorphic, it's very hard to take advantage of those, so that when you go stand there, you get a feel of a really big room,
right.
And when you photograph it, it gets reduced by the frame format.
Right. We tried to show the Russian general, General Dubinin, is always eating in this scene, and so that when we pick him up later in his office in the frozen tundras of Russia, he's eating again.
Oh, not perfectly conceived.
Bist du verrückt? Auf der ganzen Bilderbeiten recht radikale Parteien.
This was a shot that we did months and months later, when we realized that we needed one little piece of explanation about who this conspiracy was, and also an establishing shot of Haft, who winds up having a fight with Ben later in the movie. That was my mistake. We didn't really get a shot of him when we shot this scene. And consequently, in the first test screenings, people said, who's the blonde guy fighting with Ben?
So when those guys on the couch look back, they've just been looking at Dressler.
Right.
Not Haft.
Or at one point, there's the shot of Dressler looking back when he sort of gives a nod to Haft. I never shot Haft in there, but Neil Travis used that moment to make it look as if he's looking back at Haft talking. It's a nice piece of editing. It's one of the many ways that editors make directors look good.
The other is the way they dress.
Keeping this murder out of focus and in the background was the beginning of an approach that we had all through the movie to acts of violence, which is not to have them graphic and in your face. We tried to be as restrained as possible.
Evacuate
And once again, we're on the docks of Montreal, doubling for, in this case, Baltimore. And they let us have this warehouse. And as I recall, we built a little tiny bit of the set. You can just see a little bit of that set through the door. But then this entire set was built on stage.
Right.
And it's based on a coal mine that you and I scouted once in Bosnia for a film that we will someday make. And I remember walking into that set, into that location actually, that coal mine locker room, and seeing all these clothes pulled up to the ceiling on chains, and it was just one of the eeriest things I'd ever seen.
It had some sort of mass lynching connotation or something, even though it had nothing to do with that instantly.
Yeah, because entire outfits were hanging from the ceiling. It looked like bodies in a way. It was very, very striking.
All right, brother. You have a good one.
And it worked for us in this case because, one, it's sort of unusual looking, and also it plays a role later in the fight. Having all those chains was actually a nice element to that fight scene. And we were mixing this scene. The temptation is always to have the translator, who's in Russian in this case, lower than the English language, and we realized, no, this is being broadcast in Russia. You've got to have the translation higher than the English language. So it was a little bit of a challenge to keep the English still understandable, but make it realistic.
Что ты будешь делать?
Ничего. Мы ничего не будем делать.
Did you ever have second thoughts about your decision to use subtitles?
Oh, never. Never. I think it would have pulled me out of the movie as a viewer had people been speaking heavily accented English to each other in some other country.
It's like a chess game. He's just thinking three moves ahead. He knows he has so many more tanks than we do. The NATO playbook says...
You know, we had very nice scenic... paintings and photographs outside these windows, which we don't actually see in the scene. It's too bad, because we actually had the actual view outside the CIA building from the Russia desk.
Those walls are a little thick. You know, you can see how set back those windows are. So the only way to see it was to really shoot straight into it, and it kind of flattened out in there. This is a location I liked.
I like this a lot. This was I think it was an old nunnery, as I recall.
Uh-huh.
We thought it doubled very nicely for a Russian hospital. And part of the trick was just move a lot of the people into the corridors as if they were overflowing and everybody's bundled up.
And
Liev mastered the Russian in this scene. He really just nailed it.
Он говорит, что увезет меня на Запад.
Для этого нужны деньги.
Если дурак ему не платит, так другие нашлись.
Also a nice quality of light in this room.
There's a lot of mixed light in this room, and also not too many practicals. This was a place that... I like the idea here that not only did they not have heat, but they didn't have a whole lot of electricity. You know?
Right.
A place where sick people go to die.
Or smoke.
Yeah.
Another reason it's nice to have subtitles here is it allows the actor playing John Clark to actually speak Russian. And it's impressive that you think about that character. Hey, that guy can do a lot of things.
What are three Russian atomic scientists doing in Ukraine?
Fair guess.
This was nice. This was, I think it was in the CIA operations room set, and we just turned the lights out and let this light table light the room or light the faces, actually.
It's always a challenge in a set or a location where you have a lot of scenes to do to try to mix up the look a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Turning out the lights is a good start.
Well, we do that quite a bit. We turn out the lights in the stadium.
That's right.
And there's another scene in the Russia desk later on. We turn the lights out. And in Montreal, there's an abandoned series of factory buildings called Red Path that is a very popular movie location because, in fact, Montreal doesn't let old abandoned buildings stay for very long. They tear them down pretty quick or they rehab them. So we used this as this abandoned warehouse in Ukraine and built this little sort of makeshift tent in there for the guys to work in. Originally, and these actors were all saying lines behind those masks. And we realized if we just turned the sound off for the first couple of cuts, it was cooler. They were talking about the bomb. But it was kind of cool that they weren't talking. If I had this to do over again, I would have that cigarette machine on the floor being spray painted.
To make it more clear.
To make it much more clear what okay. That spray paint image is later on. We had a lot of discussions about whether John Clark would be wearing black or white in this scene.
Right.
Yes. Yes, we do.
And we go to Baltimore for day one of principal photography. There was a whole first half of this scene, which was Kathy saying, you know, after you left the correspondence dinner, everybody didn't have the juice to be invited away was sitting around trying to wonder where you guys were going, and I was wondering, is this what my life is going to be like with you? And it was this very honest scene about two people trying to decide if they're meant to be together, and she just says, you know, I can't be with somebody who's going to keep half their life hidden from me. It was a lovely scene, and we realized the first time we tested it for an audience that there was something, we just didn't like the fact that she was busting him for having a job that we like him having.
You realized that because of the audience response?
Yeah.
Or because?
Yeah. You could feel people kind of flinching at this scene. They just... And I, in retrospect, I think they're right. I think it's better that she doesn't give him a hard time.
Are there scenes that the audience didn't like that you left in anyway?
You can take care of yourself.
Good question. I can't think of any. Now, we wanted to give Morgan a cool car. And the problem is he's so tall he doesn't fit into a lot of cool cars. And we picked this one because he actually could sit in it. There was a first half to this scene where Cabot tells him, he says, you know, when I first joined the CIA, I worked on the Russia desk too. And it was a whole thing about how I see myself in you. And we took it up because we realized he shouldn't have to explain. He should just give the order and Jack follows the order. I think it plays better this way.
Clark, so this is 3 days ago.
Now, this little room, this is the hold of the ship, was a metal room that we built on a gimbal, so the room is actually shaking.
The infrared satellite was in position 34 hours ago. Took this
and the camera was on sort of armed into the room, right? So it's not touching the ground.
Right, and that enables the set dressing to move around independently of the camera. You know, you could always move the camera and make it look like the ship is tilting, but the ropes and the lights wouldn't be swinging
right.
The way they are. And I think it also helps the actors
Absolutely.
In ways that are hard to measure. But
just the fact they have to keep shifting the balance, but you know, shifting legs to sort of maintain balance gives them a feeling of being on a ship.
For two reasons. Either we can't see them, which is bad, or worse, they left, and we're too late.
It's also a tricky piece of business to light, as I recall.
There weren't too many places to hide lights in this set. It didn't come apart, I think we took a piece out very early on, and it took so long that we were discouraged and didn't do it again.
Yeah.
was built to be slightly more strong structurally than a real boat.
Clark? No! No! Cabot tells me you got my ticket to the correspondence.
Another thing if I had his do-over again that I would do is I would redo these close-ups not on stage, but try and get out on the water. Because every time I see this, it just looks like a bunch of guys on a stage and there's a prop guy throwing water on them. I don't know, we darkened the print a little bit just to make it a little more obscure, but it's still, to me, it's the least real-looking thing in the film.
Clark.
What?
No, I'm not going in there.
Goddamn right, you're not. You stay here and make sure no one steals my boat. Be right back.
Was a very difficult location. There was we put this fence up and there was so much snow on the ground it was just hard to move around.
Yeah, I think what we have is actually standing on 4 or 5 feet of snow at least.
Yeah. And this is obviously a breakaway fence. The metal has been scored, so if he just pulls on it, it'll come apart, but it's a nice effect. Now, when we go inside here, we had a lot of meetings about this. Originally, we were going to shoot this scene with night vision goggles. Do you remember why we gave up on that?
Nope.
It was a cool idea.
Yeah. But it wasn't the technical challenge, I know that. It was...
One of the things Clancy mentioned to me after he saw the film, he says in reality he'd be wearing night vision goggles. But then we have the idea that what he hears a sound, and the sound is what draws him in, and the sound we will discover later is the sound of these feral dogs chewing on the dead guys inside the tent. We were never able to come up with a sound that was accurate but unrecognizable, so we abandoned that and went for some really kind of beautifully undefined eerie sounds that feel like it might be part of the music or it might be part of sort of an expressionistic soundtrack or something, but we never did come up with dog chewing sounds, probably for the better. Never forget the first time we shot this scene. They brought us these dogs. They were supposed to be wild dogs, and they were like just back from the manicurist. A Lizard poodle,
like these Wasops.
Very cute little dogs. We said, no, we don't think so. Come back another time.
The second batch of dogs was good.
Yeah, they were good. Something we did all through this scene is that the flashlight, which is lighting the things that he sees, is always moving around, so it casts these sort of moving shadows, which I really liked seeing.
And he's actually lighting his face with the flashlight by pointing the light at a card that's just beneath the camera.
And we spent about 2 days shooting this scene just because it was complicated having these guys yelling at him, and we wanted to get a lot of coverage, and we also shot a lot of Jack slipping down the corridor, getting in position behind them, and we edited. We realized let's just take all that stuff out, let him just show up when Liev says shoot him, Jack.
Put the gun down, all right?
And Neil Travis, our editor, had us go back and shoot close-ups of that flashlight shining right into the lens, which really helped. He used them very well, I thought.
Yeah, I wasn't sure when we shot this if this little trick with the gun was going to work, but those close-ups help make it work, I think.
Yeah, because they blind you the way the characters are blinded.
Shoot him, Ryan.
So it's nice, we haven't seen where Jack is, and Leo says, shoot him, Ryan, that's the first time we see him, and I think that works a lot better than seeing him creep around the hallway and come up in position.
Figures out what I'm saying.
Three!
And it was surprising to me how difficult it is to shoot a scene where people are yelling at each other. Because you lose a certain amount of precision. You have to do things over and over to get things to happen at the right moment. And then the challenge to the editor is how to cut it so it doesn't feel like you were so meticulous.
Right. Well, the fact that it's in Russian, I thought, complicated it a little too.
Mm-hmm.
They say we're spray painting this big, about the size of a fridge. The imprint it left is pretty deep, too, so we know three things for sure. It was heavy, something was radioactive, and now it's gone.
You said one of them spoke.
Whenever I'm in the audience watching this scene, I always think, okay, all the setup is done now. We're about to start paying things off. And it's like the audience has been very patient. There's been almost an hour of setup.
Right.
Which is a very non-traditional structural approach for a movie, but I think it really is. It's true to the Clancy style, and I think it's a really interesting approach.
And what do you think keeps people plugged in for that full hour?
The characters. I think the actors are so good, and there's enough sort of charm and humor in addition to the slightly increased ratcheting of tension.
Communism was a fool's errand. The followers of Marx gone from this earth. But the followers of Hitler are bound and thrive.
I really like this sequence. This webcam speech intercut with the movement of the bomb from the docks onto the truck through the streets of Baltimore and into the basement. And it's a thrill to just put a camera on Alan Bates up close and just let him do his thing. He's such a wonderful actor.
The world has changed. Global community.
As I recall, he had quit smoking, and so those were sort of herbal cigarettes or something. They weren't actual. It wasn't tobacco, as I recall.
Yeah, they're foul smelling. They don't smell like something good. Like burning seaweed or something.
One more thing. Let no man call us crazy. They called Hitler crazy, but Hitler wasn't crazy. He was stupid.
I remember that camera, and his close-up is just inches from his face. Not this angle, but the one right in front of him. It's very close. I always thought that this one. I always thought that's hard for an actor to be that close.
I always loved using this locked-up video still, sort of an intermittent herky-jerky approach in here, because it's just a guy taking a box off a truck.
No, I like it, too. And when I was doing the digital master, and I noticed that the transfer guy, who was great, had really cleaned it up and fixed the contrast and everything, and it took me a little while to undo all that to make it look really
like
surveillance
like a crappy video camera. Yeah.
So what'd you find?
Ukraine doesn't exactly have a thriving.
Now this, we turned the lights out on this set. We're saying it's Sunday morning and Dylan's in there by himself. It was just the light on his desk, basically.
He was the only guy who had a light, yeah.
And flown to the Canary Islands.
Well, I can't find Cabot. So the Air Force has a nuclear assessment team.
Call them. Jack, he got put on a cargo freighter headed for the East Coast.
What?
Baltimore, Jack. It's coming here.
And then our final day of principal photography, we shot the drums and the singer. And this is a CGI blimp that's been put into a real aerial shot of Baltimore, panning down to a CGI stadium, which we set as far away from downtown Baltimore as possible so that people would understand that, in fact, Baltimore is not wiped off the face of the earth, that the explosion is miles away. And then our aerial unit got to shoot the presidential motorcade.
I never knew there was more than one verse to the Star Spangled Banner. It's a long life of not knowing that. I'm grateful to you in this movie for informing me.
It's a lot of verses.
And I like that verse, this verse.
It's good, isn't it?
Yeah, it's really good.
Arnold McCullough, who was the singer here, was basically in just a completely limbo set. And CGI folks added the audience and the flashbulbs and the fireworks.
That was another case where there was a big discussion about whether the fireworks should be practical or a visual effect. And again, another case where the visual effect won out.
Yeah. Just because you have so much more control over it.
And we didn't have to deal with permission from the stadium and would it start a fire on the field. And
right. In our first discussions about, we were shooting in Montreal's Olympic Stadium, and you and I were looking at football footage, and we said, well, that stuff looks good because it's outdoors and it's muddy and it's rainy. What can we do in here? And I think it was your suggestion, well, let's just turn the lights out. And let the president come in the dark, which is probably not realistic. I don't know if the Secret Service would want him to do that, but it sure makes for a much more dramatic entrance on film.
Especially in that stadium where I just couldn't control the light at all. And that artificial turf is such a piercing green.
Yeah. We really put Ben up in a helicopter with the camera, and we actually had a shot of him. Camera was inside the chopper as he runs into it, and the camera's rolling as it takes off, because I really wanted people to see that he was really in a helicopter. We wound up cutting that out, as so often happens with transitional moments like that.
But I remember just you and I and Ben and a camera operator who functioned as the assistant. But
just flying around.
And Ben got a little queasy.
Yeah, well, we were banking, and I was getting a little green also, I must say.
Sir! Hello? Sir!
There's a lot of CGI in these shots inside the football stadiums. We only had about 5,000 extras, and so the shots that show wide shots of the stands are often populated with, like this shot, for instance, in the background. There's a lot of CG people back there.
I like your idea that Morgan would stay seated when everybody else stood, and that then he'd stand up when everybody else sat down. I still think that's really a cool way to show this moment when he gets the news.
Look, I'm losing you. I'll call you back from the ball for more. Sir.
And the look on his face is just unbelievable. And then I think Neil did a wonderful job with this sequence. It's in lieu of showing people getting killed. We're showing people alive in what would be their last few minutes of it.
Did you ever consider taking that stuff out?
No.
And audiences reacted positively?
Yes, very much so. And I love this moment, when we're running behind him. Jamie actually pulled a hamstring on one of these takes, but what I love about this is these are guys running truly as fast as they could, and the camera is running as fast as it could, and he's trying to hold it still. There's nothing phony about that shot. It's a bunch of guys running fast, and I also love being behind them. The traditional Hollywood way is you lead them from in front, from a picture car, a camera car, and then you can see their faces. But boy, being behind them makes you feel you're part of this herd.
Right, like you might not make it.
Mm-hmm. And we let this shot run as long as we could because there's an expectation that there's going to be an explosion in it. And when there isn't an explosion, you kind of take a breath and you say, oh, I guess everything's going to be okay. And that's when the explosion happens.
And that's the shot in the hospital that really dictated the green screen out the windows more than anything.
Right. On other parts of this DVD, there are extended descriptions of how all of these effects were accomplished. Because it's gone by much too fast for the likes of you and me to describe it now.
That gimbaled helicopter footage was another example of Ben's generosity, I thought, to be thrown around in that thing.
Right.
That was quite a severe ride.
Yes, it was, with glass being, glass being thrown through there.
And he did it repeatedly and without question or complaint.
Now, we come now to the Marines rescuing the president, and this begins the post-blast look. And early in pre-production, you and I were talking about what does the world look like after the bomb goes off? And we tried a lot of things. We came up with this process, skip bleach. Can you explain that?
It's a in this case, the negative, the skip bleach was used in processing the negative, and the bleaching process is what normally removes the leftover silver that's not exposed, and in this case it's left in, and the result of that is much higher contrast, and the blacks go really black, and the whites go really white, and the color gets desaturated. And we also tested it in pre-production against shooting the original negative and processing it normally, and then doing the skip bleach afterwards in the printing process. But I'm always nervous about doing that because I don't know where you're going to be or I'm going to be at that point, and mm-hmm. how people are going to feel about our original idea or any other ideas that we ever had.
Right.
And so something can easily be undone or not done
right.
that we intended. So I like the fact that we were able to build it in
mm-hmm.
so that it couldn't be undone later.
And yet when you skip bleach to the negative, you're never really sure exactly what it's going to look like.
Yeah, that's definitely part of its charm, is that what's unexpected is often right. the best part of it.
And this whole sequence, I love this scene. We used real Marines, and I gave them as little direction as possible. I simply said, go to the wrong door first, and then get the president out of there, and say whatever you would say to the president. And these guys all day long were setting up perimeters and doing their thing. And we had three cameras going and a lot of wind machines, plus these helicopters were kicking up a hell of a lot of dust and smoke.
And just the noise that the helicopters make is so staggering. You don't appreciate it on film, but it gets your heart pounding to be around those things. They're incredibly powerful and noisy.
Remember this bedroom location? We discovered just before we shot the scene, there were these series of closets you could walk through to get into the bedroom. We decided to put the approach to it through these closets, and I think it was a nice way to get into it. Again, you're in the dark. You have no idea where you are. You hear footsteps. It's very intriguing. So again, we go back to the States, and we're back into the skip bleach because this is the post-blast look. Ben hanging upside down. Ben has a stunt double named Tom McComas who looks so much like him that we were actually able to do stunts with Tom where we saw his face. So this is Ben almost falling, and that's McComas taking the fall for him. I think it was the day before we shot this, the special effects and the stunt unit actually crashed this helicopter. So this is the helicopter you see rolling down the hill, and just left it in place.
Then didn't they? I mean, we actually got there in the morning. Didn't they redo it or something? Because remember when we arrived, they were just leaving one morning.
You know, you're right. They did it early that morning, and then we shot the rest of the day.
I don't remember what happened on their original day. Did it rain or something didn't work, or they couldn't
right.
quite get
they
it ready in
it.
Time or something, but they didn't do it. Yeah.
yeah. Also, the reason there's no sound during the beginning of this scene is because one day the editor was playing the scene, he forgot to turn the sound on. I said, God, that's great. It just had the wind. It didn't have the sound of Ben's body hitting the ground. And I said, let's just do that.
Works really well, I think.
Yeah.
Where are you?
Now, this was also, Mary Pat is actually outside the CIA operations center set. We just simply, there was a wall with windows. We just put her at a desk on the other side of that actual working set and just shot her. It was another way of using that set in a way that we haven't seen before.
We don't know where he is. We just know he's not there. Can you call back in about an hour?
We don't have an hour. The fellow's going to want to shoot off Tuffy. He's going to hit back now.
Listen to me.
We have to prove that it wasn't the Russians before he's convinced it is.
Well, can you get back to Langley?
No, there's no time. There must be a command post on site. The radiation assessment team, where are they?
Standler Tunnels, south of the city. Jack, listen, the prevailing winds are blowing the fallout to the east and the north. As long as you stay south, you're okay.
Now, Bruce McGill, who plays the National Security Advisor, told me that when they were shooting the scene, the sound of those helicopters was so overwhelming that not only could he not hear Jamie Cromwell, who was standing next to him, he said, but I was physically disoriented. He says, I had a hard time not falling down. I love that ghostly helicopter taken off in the background. And now we come into the NAOC plane set. And this is one of my favorite scenes because we told the actors, we're not going to give you marks. You just get on the plane, whatever order you get on, go to wherever you want to go. If someone else is talking, talk over them. Ron Rifkin truly couldn't get the chair to work, so we left that in. And I just love how kind of frantic and unprepared everybody seems in this situation. They've trained for this all their lives, and now they don't have a clue what to do because the information isn't coming in. No one quite knows what's going to happen next.
I always remember those guys kind of looking at us after the first rehearsal, waiting for us to say, now don't go there, and I didn't quite hear you.
Right.
It was like letting a caged animal go in the wild where they take a couple of steps out of the cage and not sure whether they should run or not. And
right.
Then after a little while, they got with it.
Yeah.
And they almost each one of them, I think to a man, they came to me at some point during that part of the shoot and said how much they enjoyed doing the work that way, you know, how much fun it was for them.
And I remember telling the camera operators, don't, you know, every take we'd move them to a different position so they could never get comfortable with their shot. It was always slightly awkward.
Dubinin?
Aircraft has left for America.
Now, we had some real planes and some cardboard cutout planes outside this window to make it look like a whole air wing.
Every finish.
And this shot, we had this such a good idea that we'd start shooting this through the window. The camera's actually outside this little building. And then we would simply fall back as the guys left, and it, for some reason, it just doesn't have the impact I thought it would have. It was hard to set up, but the move is so seamless that I don't think it registers that we were outside the whole time. Now, this was a little tunnel in the middle of Montreal, and the CG folks replaced Baltimore. Another one of the shots where we showed that Baltimore was not destroyed, that the tall buildings remain, the fires are way in the background.
Jack Ryan, CIA?
Lord Shiro, you need to wait outside with everybody else.
Oh, I don't think so. I need to know everything you know about the bomb.
Look, pal, we're collecting samples, then we have to analyze the debris. So take a number, get in line, and we'll have the report out tomorrow.
Captain. I don't have time for this. I need to know where this bomb came from. I will settle from where it didn't come from, but I need to know now. Otherwise, there may not be a tomorrow.
Wesson, where are you?
About a quarter mile from Ground Zero.
And we had a lot of discussions about how to show Ground Zero. We were going to have a scene with the rover, the two guys in their protective suits and the rover out there. And the art department built quite a big Ground Zero set, but we filled it up with so much smoke you don't actually see it. It's just kind of a bare rubble field. But we had the actual AFRAT team come, and they outfitted these guys with the real outfits and gave them the real equipment, and that's the real rover.
Customs must have a database. Get me a name. And where's Captain?
No one knows. We're checking the hospitals.
Have you tried Memorial?
He wouldn't be there. It's on the other side of
Is it still... It's Kathy's hospital.
Phones are down.
All right, can you keep checking for me? Thanks.
Now, they could have launched a cruise missile. DSP sats might
not... Remember, we decided early on that this little conference, not the conference room, this little briefing room on the plane would have red light in it.
Right.
Just to give it a different look from the... the rest of the plane. To its left is the conference room, to its right is the main cabin with all the people working at their various consoles.
And what we ended up with was this sort of red, white, and blue thing going on in
right.
the plane.
Right.
Loss of life is severe. No accident.
You know, there's a lot of intercutting and from here on in between here and Russia and stuff. And I always thought it was... I remember we talked about it being important that people immediately know
where you are,
where they were.
In fact, there are scenes coming up where we had planned who was going to be looking left and who's going to be looking right, so that when the American president is talking to the Russian president, it looks like, you know, they're facing each other in a way.
Whoa, that was a little fast.
Please accept the deepest sympathies of the Russian people. If it was deliberate, this is a crime without precedent. What madman would do such a thing, and for what purpose? You must believe that Russia had nothing to do with this.
I love this little moment. You know, how kind of offhand of it, the shooting of it is. I feel like we're just sort of catching little moments.
One of the great things about this kind of cast is, I think, is that... It's always eager to get a shot of somebody. It's not like, oh, the burden of coverage, but, you know, can I get a shot of Ron Rifkin even when he's not talking? Definitely, you know.
Yeah. It's a fantastic cast. We cast those guys. We wanted people with a lot of theater experience because we wanted it to be an ensemble of people who could play off each other. And, oh, man, could they. This was the coldest night of the year, by far.
Yeah.
This was the 25 or 30 below night.
This is a night when even the local people who were more or less used to this kind of weather stopped being able to think clearly or talk. Or
yeah. And then our effects unit went out and shot. The Navy let us have this aircraft carrier, and this is actually a day shot that we've turned into night, added a few little lights on the top of the island there. And then to go inside, we actually wound up using the set, or a version of the set from the TV series JAG, because they had all this equipment, and we kind of moved it around into a different order. But originally, we wanted to shoot that scene in a real aircraft carrier.
And we scouted one.
We scouted one, and we discovered that in addition to the almost impossibility of getting our lights in that room, that every one of those monitors could not be synced to the camera, so you get roll bars in every monitor in the room.
So I had this bad feeling that in rigging the place with lights and stuff, we were going to unplug some vital piece of equipment or break a wire that nobody would know about until they really needed it.
Yeah.
I generally have a take-no-prisoners attitude towards locations, but in this case, it made me step back a little bit.
And this shot, I think, is one of the triumphant shots of the CGI people. This was a daytime shot of an aircraft carrier with no flames or smoke coming out of it. And I think they did a very realistic job of getting that to look as damaged as it was.
Russian aircraft, there is no question.
Donnell thinks that he can save the ship, but flight ops are definitely out.
Сийского самолета.
Я не давал приказа атаковать. Вы не должны предпринимать ответные действия.
Until we investigate all possibilities.
Like you did in Chechnya? Mr. President, who is in control of your armed forces?
We sprosili bombu na Hiroshima. We sprosili bombu na Nagasaki. Ne vam citat ne
maram. Nice Dutch angle here to kind of show how askew the world is at this moment for this fellow.
Mr. President, we are now at a de facto state of war with the Russians.
Jamie is so much taller than all those other guys, you know, that it was almost impossible to get them into
the same shot.
The same shot.
Mass fraction is huge.
Okay, connect me to Dylan, will you? I'll hold.
There it is. Savannah River.
Oh, yeah.
Now, it's a little unrecognizable, but these were the two fellows in the protective suits who were out at Ground Zero.
They always generate too much promethium. Hold on a second. Can you translate that into English for me?
This plutonium came from the DOE plant at Savannah River. February of 68, from K reactor. You can even tell which part of K reactor.
Wait a minute. This is our plutonium?
Made in the USA.
Dylan, you gotta find Cabot for me.
Are you advocating we launch a first rocket?
It is not a first rocket!
This entire plane, which is a modified 747, the interior set was on a gimbal, an enormous metallic gimbal, a steel gimbal that let us rock and roll the whole set. And I think this was the scene where we really hit it.
Yeah, and it pretty much filled up the entire stage, and the trick was to get the cameras in here and isolate them from the motion of the airplane so that... Because if they're tied in together, then it looks like nothing's moving. So we had to reach in with a crane frequently and let the plane move around us.
That scene also has the only use of the F word in the movie. We originally had two, and the ratings board said, take one out and we'll let you have a PG-13. So we decided to let the president. The rank has its privilege, so the president gets to say it. This was an aircraft carrier that we filled up with people. You can barely see half of them because of the skip bleach, I think.
Yeah, and there's smoke in there. And once the skip bleach and the smoke get together, the highlights really go away.
Sir.
And this tent, the sort of mesh-like tent, was way in the back of the set. It was supposed to be just background, and when we went to shoot the scene, we realized, you know, there's something kind of cool about being in that little area.
Fine.
For Cabot's death.
Sir, the bomb, the plutonium. What?
One of my favorite moments when we were lighting this scene, Morgan was lying there just very quietly, very patiently. He was just lying on that stretcher. And at one point, somebody brushed by and they knocked the IV bag off the stand, and Morgan just turned and said to someone, "My shit fell."
I'm gonna track down the arms dealer. I can't get a hold of him. I don't know what to do. She works in Baltimore, so I don't know.
It's medic.
Early in editing, we had music over the dying, and it stopped when he died. Then we realized, let's try it the other way. Let's have no music, and then when he dies, let the music begin. So it didn't seem so much like we were trying to play the moment, but we were actually sort of honoring the moment by being quiet.
It sounds like your sound breakthrough in this movie was when not to use it often.
It's like you with lights.
Yeah.
Less is more. Yeah, in fact, the whole opening sequence really doesn't have any natural sound until the plane is flying.
Port of Baltimore. Can you get to the docks?
Yeah.
Find the Transcon warehouse. The name on the manifest is Mason.
Sorry, I need this truck.
Now, we had about a block and a half at most in Montreal that we could have this much fire going. And maybe it was out of block, actually. And I think we used every bit of it in this sequence.
Yeah. And the fire does a really nice thing with the skip bleach, I think. It looks kind of phosphorescent. It doesn't just look like regular flames.
Now, Ben has crashed the truck in the little red path area where we shot the interior of the abandoned Ukrainian warehouse. This is just outside that building in a little courtyard. All abandoned buildings, we were able to have flames coming out of the windows and on the ground, and we were really able to flame it up out there. just redid these inserts. We shot them onto the lock-offs and then realized that just making them feel a little handheld would help a lot, which is hard to do with something that tiny.
Towards the camera, it's not that long a shot, huh?
Sir, we've come up with another alternative.
Now, if I had to do this again, I would throw focus to these guys. We had that discussion at the time, but I realize now your eye goes to that movement, and we should have been sharp on them at that in the master.
Smart bombs and F-16s.
We thought we were being kind of...
Yeah, that's funny that you say that, because I like it this way. I like that you're with the president,
right.
And there are people talking around him, and yeah. He's the one who has to make the call.
Hit him.
And Ron's face in that scene is just priceless. Now the Defense Department gave us these fighters and said, We'll let you film them on a mock bombing run, but they won't drop bombs. So these bombs are CGI. Everything else about this shot was real. And this was all, I think this was Kosovo footage. And again, I love the distortion of it all. Now we're in the basement of that water treatment plant, which had a wonderful cavernous basement to build this set in. And I think this was actually a really successful-looking set. It was, unfortunately, so cold and damp that I got sick. I came out with the flu, and the doctor came to the set. She wouldn't even go down there. It was so cold. She said, "You come upstairs, I'll take your temperature."
Yeah, this place really feels underground, and it really is.
I love how far back that set goes. That green area must be 30 or 40 yards away from him.
Yeah, it's way back there.
Now, after we filmed the hospital intact, the art department spent the night trashing that set, just pulling the ceiling apart and taking sledgehammers to the walls, and I think they really did a good job. Some of these close-ups of injured people were shot at the big FEMA hangar.
Can you hear me?
But they actually worked better for us story-wise here, so we cut them into the sequence.
What do you got? What do we do with the ones we know won't make it? Whatever we can.
What? Look, Abbott died.
And this, too, we were shaking up the set. You can see on the left the reflections of that telephone cord shaking. Some people actually suggested that Ben's cell phone would not be working, but in fact, in a very low-yield explosion that was a subsurface explosion below a concrete stadium, the electromagnetic pulse really would not affect his phone, which is miles away. He's not anywhere near Ground Zero. He's in the area in town where the fires are, but he's nowhere near Ground Zero. So according to all our experts, his phone would work. Just in case there's still some non-believers out there.
Seems unusual to find radiation poisoning all the way out here.
I have never myself seen such a thing. That is why we published...
Again, we're back in the California desert. We set up this little Arab village by a date farm, as I recall.
I like this shot. It's just simple and no cuts. Just hear the guys and see where they are. But that was really efficient.
Was anyone else exposed to the materials that made you sick?
Now, another thing, if I could do it again, I would do it differently. We wanted some prosthetics on Mr. Ghazi to show that he was losing his hair, that he had some kind of cancer. And unfortunately, the solution the prosthetics people came up with sort of made his face puffier because they wanted to sort of hide the lines or something. It made him look the opposite of gaunt.
And I find bomb. We sell to money buy such things.
Also, in retrospect, the guy dying should be the face that we recognize better. Should have had him find the bomb, or vice versa, had the guy who finds the bomb be the guy who dies.
Right.
I think it's a little less clear who he is until he tells his story, we found the bomb.
Right.
He did a really nice job in the scene. I thought he was very good.
He's a good actor.
Very good.
Going to die?
It's just there's only so many angles you can get on a guy who's lying down.
Yeah. And this, again, is that tent that was brought all the way from Morocco to block the light. It's every light we have hanging inches above it till smoke is coming off the thing and very little light is getting into that tent.
That was a hot set. I remember how hot that was.
It's Olsen. He lives in Damascus.
And when we go to Olsen's apartment here, we put the little opera in the background to establish the fact he's an opera lover, which will pay off later. But I remember we did a take of this where there was somebody vacuuming the carpet, and we did one without. We weren't quite sure what the best way to establish this guy's place was.
Oh, yeah, we're getting it all.
Ядерный удар по Colorado Springs вывезет из строя их ПВО.
I like this. I have to talk about staying with the president. We're just moving with him, and you see the people who are talking in the background out of focus. And we timed it so that as people do their lines, they actually show up in the background. In this shot, we flopped this shot left to right. We actually shot him walking right to left through it, and we realized in the editing room that it would look better with him going in this direction.
What happens then? We prepare to take out their land-based missiles with a massive nuclear strike. Find and kill their subs.
We actually wound up doing that quite a bit in this movie. There's moments where you say, gee, I wish I could have had that guy looking the other way.
What are our chances?
In fact, if you notice where Bruce McGill is in this scene. He's standing against the wall watching things. We have a line coming up where he actually said it to the president early in the scene when the president was on the left. We wanted him to say it later in the scene when the president's on the right, so we just flopped the shot.
Did you scan them and flip them digitally, or did you just flip the negative?
I don't recall.
We will respond against his cities.
I spent my entire adult life wanting to be president.
This is my presidency.
Sir,
this is coming up now, one of the shots that we flopped, this one here. Some future aggressor. Because we changed the position of the scene where he actually says the lines.
I'm giving the order for snap count. Maximum readiness.
And this shot is pure CGI. There isn't a physical element in that. I think they did a great job on this.
Shot looks good.
Yeah.
Wow. He shows wire payments of $45 million from someone named Dressler.
Dylan, go run Dressler, find out who he is. Jack, I really want you out of there.
I am at the docks. I think there's somebody inside.
See if the name Dressler's anywhere.
No, Jack, get out of there. Dylan, call.
We added that little line of Jack's, I'm at the docks, over the phone, because when we cut to him at the docks, in the first few screenings, nobody had a clue where he was. And it's amazing how those problems just disappear with the right use of a line.
But in those screenings, had you already cut out the footage that showed him?
Running, yes.
Yeah.
Right, we did have some scenes we shot, very expensive scenes, I might add, of him running through the docks with things burning and looters stealing cases of things. We also had on the docks Haft following him. And realize that this moment is much scarier if we don't know he's behind him.
This is the sequence where you were saying that the chains come in.
They're like a character, practically. And we wound up cutting out a little bit of the fight that follows this. There was a moment where Half picks him up and throws him through the chains. We just simply cut to what right after that when he kicks him. And I think that's McComas taking the fall here. If I had it to do it again, I wouldn't have him hit him in the head with the metal tool three times, because I think that would kill him.
Where is he, goddammit?
The other thing that strikes me now, looking back on it as slightly illogical, is when these cops show up, now they've been called by the CIA to go find Jack, they take this guy that they have no idea who this guy is, and they take him out of the room. It's like, where are they taking him? Why?
I think I can help you with that.
And then the Air Force let us shoot the stealth bomber, and we, through CGI, we cloned it so we actually had three of them in this shot. Obviously closer together than they would be if they actually took off together, but it was nice to see there's more than one.
Господин президент, их бомбардировщики стелт поднялись в воздух в Авиано, в Италии. Бор, это сигнал к действию.
Приведите войска ПВО в боевую готовность.
Mr. President, the Russians are scrambling their fighters. We are out of time.
Dave!
He has a heart condition. Get a doctor.
David? Mr. President.
And I love this cut coming up. I said get a doctor. The American Mr. general calls for the launch codes, and we cut to the briefcase coming in, but it's
Colonel,
in the Russian bunker.
Actually, a lot of Steadicam work in this movie that doesn't look like Steadicam work, which I kind of like. That briefcase is an example of it.
Right, it was the only way to stay close to that object as it moved, but it's not floating.
And you can see when the camera comes around, he loses the horizon, which I think actually gives it a little more life.
Mm-hmm.
Rudy, you got to get me through to the president.
I can't do it, Jack.
Come on, get
and me. This looks to me like an animation, computer animation, but in fact that's a real stealth bomber flying around. Since we couldn't land the helicopter at the Pentagon, we just sort of put some lights up at the airport outside of Montreal and shot that. This set was in the lobby of a college building. I know when we scouted the Pentagon, we were struck by how it's a private security force, and it's a room with a sort of airport-like security devices that you go through. But they told us that every once in a while somebody tries to get in, and they are shot and killed.
Yeah, you definitely have the feeling when you're there that
serious.
They're only going to let you go so far.
Right.
General? There's a Dr. Ryan from the CIA. He wants to enter NNCC. He's unescorted, sir.
What's he want?
You, sir.
And when we went to the Pentagon to scout, they took us to the NMCC, which is the National Military Control Center. And we were impressed with how kind of unimpressive it was, in a way. It was just a hallway with a bunch of offices and no big high-tech war room. And this set in here is actually pretty realistic. There is this door with NMCC stenciled on the glass.
If anything, the anonymity of all those doors actually starts to build up to something a little spooky after a while when you're in the real place.
Mm-hmm.
My orders are to get the right information to the people who make the decisions. I just need to send some information.
What makes you think the president will even listen to you?
He doesn't have to.
На каком расстоянии к вам дорожчики?
По данным наших радаров, господин президент, они уже на территории Польши.
And this is also complete CGI. I like the lens flares from the sun.
Yeah, they look good.
You have about a minute for the launch sequence to process after you give the order. Before the order can be taken, an ID...
Very nice bit of acting here by Jamie. He's sort of unsure where the card is, and he kind of stumbles a little bit.
Mine is the... My number is the... third number down from the top.
Now, I love Ken Jenkins' look in this close-up. He's just... He's red. He looks like a... It's like a shot in a Kubrick film. He's got this sort of very steady gaze.
The order to strike must now be confirmed.
I think these guys did a really good job with this section. They convey the gravity of it without melodrama, and that, I think, is a real accomplishment.
Right. All of the bluster is gone now. It's just very quiet and it's serious.
The Secretary of State is the fourth number down.
The order to strike has now been confirmed by the two-man rule.
MCC, this is Lassiter. Strike order has been confirmed. Start the sequence.
We've got activity on the hotline.
They've had their chance.
No, somebody's talking to the Kremlin.
And now we go into what's called the Mo-Link room, or the Moscow Link room in the Pentagon, and it really looks just like that. It's a very narrow room with bright white walls and a whole bunch of computer monitors and keyboards and printers lined up on one wall.
Russian. But we know the weapon.
Which really struck me as interesting when I saw it. I was expecting something much more imposing for the actual heart of the hotline.
Who are we talking to?
Now, a lot of planning went into who's facing left and who's facing right in the sequence, because we've got three different parties talking to each other, and it was...
Right.
And they were shot weeks or months apart.
A neo-fascist named Dressler bought an A-bomb on the black market.
Cut him off!
The system is set up so you can't cut it off. That's the whole idea!
Then get somebody down there to stop him!
He paid three disaffected Russian scientists to make the bomb active. He shipped it to the U.S., where a man named Mason was hired to deliver the bomb to the target and set our countries on a collision course.
Не верю. Ни одному слову не верю. Этот Райан агент ЦРУ.
Судьба страны не должна зависеть от слов врага.
Тихо. Вы не будете глупо слушаться. What are you asking of me?
Now here we are in the first week of shooting, and we decided to pan off of him. And in the last week of shooting, we panned onto Ben. It was like we just remembered when we were shooting Ben. Oh yeah, we're going to pan onto him.
Никаких, господин президент, пора принимать решение.
Надо действовать немедленно. У нас осталось всего несколько минут.
Sir, I know you. I know you had nothing to do with the Baltimore bomb, and you sure as hell...
I love what Ben does in this scene. I think he's really good. He's just on fire.
This no longer has anything to do with Baltimore. Now it's
That's
about
all,
fear.
Dr. Ryan.
Our fear of
Stop
your
typing.
Missiles, your fear of our sub.
Move away
fear
from the keyboard.
Weak, fear of making a mistake.
Sergeant, move away from
fear
the keyboard.
Fear of the other guy that has built these goddamn bombs in the first place.
It stopped.
Его прервали.
Все. Они готовятся к атаке?
Я жду вашего приказания к пуску.
Kieran's a guy who can take a wide-angle lens close-up.
Yeah, it's a great face.
30 seconds to launch.
Oh, my God. Mr. President?
And we very intentionally didn't have the moment here where it's victory and people break out into applause, which is what you often see in movies, and it always struck me as a false moment.
We're in a defensive alert for the moment, but our offensive forces are withdrawn.
If you match our move, I propose a phased mutual stand down over the next 5 hours.
Stop the launch sequence.
Lassiter here. Flash override. Stop the sequence. Stop the sequence.
Order the planes to stand down. Take us to DEFCON 3.
And would somebody ask Mr. Ryan if I can use the phone now?
And now it's Jack late at night in the empty Molink room. And we transition to early the next morning in the hospital, because we've got this sort of golden light in there to signal that. It didn't work as a cut. Nobody knew. It used to be a cut before it was dissolved, and nobody knew that it was a time transition, so we put the dissolve in.
Well, I remember we did a shot in the hallway where you saw a guy sweeping up and stuff. It was meant to give you a clue where you were.
Right. But as so often happens, those transitional shots are the first things you cut out of the film. And here we are in the lobby of the Montreal City Hall. And then months later, we picked up a shot of Ben standing up with these fellows just to suggest he's there. And I think that's my hand.
This is your hand.
Yeah.
The shadow of your hand.
The shadow of my hand. This is actually Combeferre's hand, but I was pleased to help him out in that scene. And this is just a great bit of editing by Neil Travis and his staff. They put this together right after we shot it, basically, and it just worked out great. Our feeling here was show the knife come down and then pan away before the knife actually cuts the throat. And Kieran has this great look on his face here, like almost like he knows that his friend General Dubinin is about to die. It was a nice choice of Neil's to put that shot in there. This was another day when the weather worked in our favor when we were shooting the killing of Dubinin, because we were out on a hill in Montreal, and it was snowing. And again, we cut way, way wide, so that we don't actually see anything happening up close. And here's Montreal doubling for Vienna. One of my favorite moments, because you just know this car is going to explode. And as an editor, Neil is sort of teasing the audience, like, well, it doesn't explode when the aid turns ignition on. And he's timed this with the music, so you're thinking, okay, he's opening the cigarettes, and you go, oh, I get what's going to happen. And he looks down. Does it happen here? No. It's going to happen when he pushes the button for the lighter. He pushes it. No, it doesn't happen there either. It happens when the lighter comes up. And that explosion actually did set off the car alarm next to it, which was great. And then on stage, we shot Michael Byrne and digitally inserted the reflection of the blown-up car in the window. And then went from here to yet another ending. The film does have a couple of endings, I must admit.
Although it's a film where the ending wasn't reshot.
That's right. It's
unusual.
That's right. We did get to shoot across from the White House. The CGI people put in that whole crowd on the White House lawn. And we added this line of hedges here, which don't exist in reality, so that we could shoot the scene of Ben and Bridget and Michael without having all the tourists looking in.
Dr. Ryan.
And we were shooting this scene on a summer day in Washington. It was in June. It was threatening to break out into a thunderstorm at any moment, and the sky was pitch black when we were doing Michael's close-ups. And the visual effects people came in and lightened the sky for us, because it was noticeably darker than the angle on Ben and Bridget.
And within just a few minutes of finishing the scene, there was a torrential downpour that didn't stop for quite a while.
Yeah, I remember by the time we were walking to our cars, we were getting soaked.
Perhaps he didn't know you well enough.
Cabot did tell me he had a source in Russia.
To keep the back channels open?
In hopes of staving off disaster.
President Kennedy said, our most basic common link is that we all inhabit this small planet. We all breathe the same air. We all cherish our children's future. And we are all mortal.
I will miss so very much talking to William.
And the Park Service that actually let us shoot here told us, while we were shooting, they said, you know, it's a good thing the president is not in residence today. He was out of town. I said, why is that a good thing? They said, well, this park is the view from the president's bedroom, and had he been here, we would never have let you shoot here, because we don't want to spoil the view from the president's bedroom. So,
modest gift. I'd rather he just went back to the office and did some work.
He just asked me this morning.
We haven't told anybody about... How could you possibly know?
Well, John, four down. Let's do it again.
Yeah, I'm there. Count me in.
All right.
Ever the past and sorrow.
remember.